This is FM 100.5 and 101.9. AM 1450, Rutherford County's place to talk. WGNS, Murfreesboro, your good neighbor station. This is The Truman Show with Truman Jones. A look at the politics, news, sports, and people that are shaping Rutherford County. Now your host, Truman Jones.
Good afternoon, Rutherford County. It's a beautiful Monday. I hope everyone is doing well and situated inside. I know it's going to be terribly hot this afternoon. I want to let you know that the first half of the show will be brought to you by Stan McNabb Automotive, where they provide quality vehicles from Chevrolet, Dodge, Jeep, Ford, and Cadillac to the Murfreesboro, McMinnville, and Shelbyville, Tennessee area. And their large selection ensures that you can have a vehicle for everyone. For a quality used car in Tullahoma, visit their dealership located at 2000 North Jackson Street. They have a large inventory of pre-owned cars, trucks, SUVs, and minivans to select from. A vehicle you buy from Stan McNabb, Chevrolet, Cadillac, Buick, GMC, and Stan McNabb Jeep, Dodge, Chrysler in Tullahoma, and Stan McNabb Ford in Lewisburg, and a vehicle you buy from another dealership may look alike, have the same equipment, and price the same, but the truth is they are different. Only the new or pre-owned vehicles from Stan McNabb has oil changes and tires for life at no additional charge. And I have one of my best friends on today. We have been friends go back well over 30 years, probably closer to 40 years. And we've experienced a lot together, seen a lot of changes. And one thing about being around Buddy, and I'm talking about Buddy Royston, Lawrence Royston from Bristol, Tennessee, on the good side of Bristol, Tennessee. And, you know, one thing about it, Buddy, you and I have experienced a lot of life-changing situations and have watched others do it. And you remember Gary Lynn Petty, who used to come down to the sheriff's office quite a bit and was in the radio business and in the entertainment business for many years, working with people like Jim Reeves and Ray Stevens and some of the others. And unfortunately, he passed away this last week, and I was honored to be a pallbearer in his funeral. And, Jimmy C. Newman and some of the people that have been known in this community for years and years and years, and Tom Perriman, who is an icon to this particular area. He kind of reminds me a lot of Bart Walker. You know, everybody knows Bart and will remember him forever. That's a lot of what you get from Tom. And it was such a, even though it was a sad occasion, it was a joy to see him again and some of his family members and to remember Gary in such a really honest and real way. And I appreciate those things. And you being a Methodist minister, you deal with this all the time. And that's one of the things I think about you with all the things that we've been through. And now you're still going through the life and death and working with people with problems. Right. And you just can't seem to get away from it.
No, you really can't. You know, I've already been in the hospital today, as you well know.
Yes.
To check on Bart Smith, who many people would know from here.
And everybody will want to know how his situation is.
You know, I think he's having a bumpy road at the moment, but really, you know, for leukemia, I think he's still within the boundaries of getting better. You know, when you go through that cycle, there's a man in my church, and I've watched him battle this disease now for 2 years. And he did the stem cell transplant. It took. I can still remember the celebration we had at church when his body started making their own stem cells after the transplant, because that means it's accepted then. Mm-hmm. And the nurses told us, they said, you know what? Science is, once they did the stem cell replacement, which is, by the way, Truman, it was just two bags that look like blood. And they come in, they do a transfusion, that's it.
Hmm.
And they tell you, they said, well, now science is over because his body has to accept these cells and take over regenerating those cells, and that's an effective transplant.
Wow.
And sure enough, in time, it didn't happen immediately, but in time, He didn't reject them, and then his body started making those same cells. And that was just absolutely a wonderful occasion, number one, to be with Jerry when that happened and his family, and number two, just the mystery of it happening. I mean, how exciting and wonderful that is. And I do know that in August, and I really wish I had brought the dates to him, and I do know that they're going to have a gathering of people to see if they can be donors, you know, because they'll be looking for a match for Bart. And they're going to have a donor get-together here in Murfreesboro in August.
And those are bone marrow donors.
Those are bone marrows. But now, bone marrow transplant and stem cells, basically the same.
Mm-hmm.
It really is the same.
Now, there is a limit on people, an age limit, I understand.
Right.
And I think you and I are probably
We're too old. Mm-hmm. You know, and I... more and more that
I'm getting tired of hearing two words, too old.
Hey, I was in a restaurant the other day, and someone referred to Susan and I, my wife of 40 years, in August the 2nd, said, "Oh, y'all are such a cute couple." And I thought, oh, brother. I mean, that would just hit me hard, you know, that because she was being sweet to us because she thought we were old. So mm-hmm. that was tough medicine, really.
Well, she's a good judge.
Yeah, that's right. I guess so. But anyway.
Before I forget it now, yeah. You know, church is such it's one of those things that just boosts you up, whether you're down mentally, physically, or whatever. Mm-hmm. And you have a core of friends always in church that are going to try to do everything they can to take care of you. Unfortunately, one of the members of our Sunday school class, mm-hmm. Glenn Bland passed away, and such a sad thing. And he was such a fighter, a gladiator, because he had a terrible round with cancer and just fought it as hard as anyone could. And he went out with his boots on. Yeah. And they're going to have the service tomorrow at 1 o'clock, so I will be a pallbearer. I just want to let the people know that I will be off tomorrow, but Dan Whittle is going to take my place. So it'll probably be a better show with him on than it would with me anyway. So Dan has been a good friend of mine for many, many years, and he was going to be on the show tomorrow, and he said I would be more than happy to do that. So I don't know who his guest will be. I'm sure it will be a great guest, but that's one of these things that a person's life is too valuable not to honor, and I'm going to miss the show tomorrow, but it's more important to accept your responsibilities to honor someone.
Yeah, you know, Truman, that's one of the things that I really do love about Rutherford County. I'm not being in many places, and I've traveled this country, and Truman knows I did before I became really a Rutherford County resident. I traveled in 40 states working for corporate America. But when I see cars pulling over to the side of the road because a funeral procession is coming the opposite way, it makes me mindful that the people here in Rutherford County do honor people's lives.
And, it brings a tear to your eye, especially if you're in that procession.
And it makes you understand the importance of what you said of respect. Mm-hmm. You know, we're all going to have to go. And when people just stop their own busyness just for a few moments to let a funeral brigade of cars go by, it really makes me mindful of this community and how tender it is toward people, really. And it's something new, and we've had a lot of new people come in this county, of course, and I was a new one at one time. To teach them that culture is worth it.
Now, you and I, we had a strange beginning. I was at the jail,
yep.
and at the old jail.
Yep. On Main.
On 400 West Main Street. And you came in. You were the jail inspector.
That's exactly
right. For the state of Tennessee. And you came through, and you couldn't believe how terrible this facility was and overrun. I mean, we were just well over capacity and didn't have anything in there that would be close to what they have now as far as the keeping up with information and being able to do your job on a daily basis. So Buddy had the right idea that we'd bring one of the TV stations in and let them take a look at the condition of the facility at 400 West Main Street. So, as it would have it, everything that could go wrong went wrong that day. And I will never forget that day if I live to be 50.
Me either. It was a crazy day. I can still remember Truman and I looking at each other and said, Truman said to me, was this your idea? And I thought, oh, brother. But I mean, nothing worked right. You know, the drunk tank toilet shot water right up into the air.
All the way under the ceiling.
The good news is it got us all wet, including the news team. Yeah. And that did break us all into laughter. And they said, well, we don't think we need to put this on the news. And they were really kind to us in that evening, as I remember watching the report of the jail conditions. And I was so relieved and so glad that it was over. You know, because, I mean, Truman's telling you all that everything that you could imagine just didn't work.
We went to the filing cabinets, which the filing cabinets back then was just one filing cabinet, and it had all the records of the prisoners that were in the facility at the time. And I was going to show them, so the camera was running, and I got a hold of the door to pull it out, and it wouldn't budge. And there I was. I didn't give up. I kept pulling and jerking. I must have looked like the biggest buffoon that was in Rutherford County.
And that I could actually, I mean, I just, I'm like Truman. I remember that day standing there saying, drawer, please open. And it was a tug of war with the file cabinet and Truman's arm. And it was all crazy. And of course, now Truman, we got tickled. I mean, we're people. We just started laughing. So nothing we could do about this. Yeah. But it turned out good. It really was okay. But I still remember that day, though, of us going in there and after it was over, sitting down saying, well, maybe this wasn't the best idea after all.
And the funny thing about it, right after that, then, of course, we had a lawsuit filed on us because of the jail conditions. Right. And it went before Judge Nixon in federal court. And at the time, there were a lot of things going on as far as private corporations were wanting to get into the building and the running of facilities, and CCA was right at the forefront at the time. And you eventually went over and worked
in that industry
with a group of people in that industry and did a great job. But the thing about it is, we went through so many different sessions with it and tried to. We had volumes of information. Either pro or against it, and we were the first ones that they actually ever came to because of the major problems that we had in the growth and all that. And after finally putting I think Randall Matlock was our director over finance at the time, and he sat down with us, and after hours and hours of looking over it, we finally decided it would probably be a whole lot more costly than what we originally thought. Not to do it and bite the bullet and go ahead and build the facility. And thank goodness we decided to, because Judge Nixon gave us a favorable ruling because of us working so diligently to take care of the problem.
That's exactly right. You know, at that time too, Truman, when I was the director of state jail inspection for Tennessee, it wasn't uncommon at all to have as many as 40, maybe even 50 county lawsuits about jail conditions all over the state. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, that's when the things were happening nationwide about the conditions of jails, and Tennessee was just a part of that movement. And I can still remember Rutherford County's determination, of course, to do what was required to do, but not to do more than they needed to do. Mm-hmm. And of course, I understood that because I was in the jails all over this county at the time. But now, those were days of sometimes, of course, you can imagine frustration, having to spend lots of money. But there were also days of here in Rutherford County, boy, was it growing. Mm-hmm. And the jail just had to be expanded for the safety of the staff, you know, because it was so overcrowded. And I can just remember that required the sheriffs of our state, of which Truman was one of the leaders in that group, just because of the progress of Rutherford County, would come together and try to figure out options and better ways and less expensive ways to meet the needs of the public, because it's really all about protecting the public.
Right.
But I enjoyed those days a lot. I really did.
In 1987 is when we moved from 400 West Main Street to 940 New Salem Highway. Yeah. And like in most situations, the plans that we had were fairly They were futuristic type plans that would work within the system. And like all those plans, when you're dealing with government, of course, they were scaled back each time that we would get into them. And then we, in 1987, we built the facility and then had to go ahead and add on and rebuild another facility a few years later. And then it was scaled back quite a few hundred seats or beds for the prisoners. And it was in just the population was just exploding at that time. And when that happens, then, of course, your jail population goes up with it. But during that period, it wasn't just the jail that we were having to deal with. We had so many other things, and we were starting to look more into the school system.
That's right. That's exactly right.
And that was in the early 1990s.
Yeah.
And then I never will forget, Gail Toon was in my office, and she was wanting to work more on the DARE program, which we already had a program, which we started in 1978 with Don Castleman.
Yeah, Mr. Castleman.
And he did a great job in the sixth grade in the anti-drug programs and also safety programs in the smaller grades. And we were very much satisfied with what was going on with him, but we wanted to look more into the high school and middle school level. And after Gail left, and we really couldn't come to a consensus on what she was pushing at the time, and she was very sincere about it, you came in right after she left, and you and I started talking about what in the world can we do to help the schools in the middle school and the high school level. And I never will forget, it was just like it was yesterday, you said, "Truman, I have heard of a program like that down in Florida."
That's correct.
And he says, "What if you would let me kind of do some research on that for you?"
Yeah.
So that's where it all started.
Yeah, I mean, this is. I hope Truman doesn't mind me sharing this. I'm a practicing Christian, and I was back then. I was not a pastor at that time, but I had been. I had my own company, and it was I'd left the corporate world, came back home to Murfreesboro, and was doing diversion schools for Davidson County and some Middle Tennessee counties, and was working in Knox County. And I had been praying about my life and what I was doing, and I really felt like God had placed it on my heart to help children. And so I invited Truman to lunch. I was a very, I mean,
I think I paid for it, though.
I hope so. But I can still remember. Is that the Holiday Inn? Remember
yes,
when
it was.
Lunch up there?
Yes, it was.
And I said, Truman.
Mr. Cohen was running the Holiday Inn restaurant.
That's exactly right. And I told Truman, I said, "Truman, I've really been praying about this, and God has put it on my heart to see what you think we should do about helping some kids." And Truman looked at me and says, "Really?" And I can still remember him smiling at me when he said that. I said, "I mean it." He said, "I believe you." And then we begin to talk about the needs of our young people here in Rutherford County. And I had talked to Sacramento, California, who was had a safe schools office in Sacramento. But they are the ones really who told me about the programs in Florida.
Hmm.
And Truman and I began to talk about that. And do you remember what we did? Do you remember us taking those principals down there? I mean, you couldn't go.
Yes, right.
And Truman said, "Bud,
I believe it's Orlando.
Yeah, I want you to take these five principals." And as a matter of fact, you know, Bud Rake's retired this year, and he couldn't go with us, but he's one of the ones that we asked.
Right.
And Gail Toon, you know, she was surely one of the ones. And we went down there and to see the School Resource Officer Program. Now, that was in April of, I'm guessing, Truman, probably 93.
Either April or 93 or 92. I know we started in 93.
Yeah, well, that's when it was then.
Okay.
Because I was so astounded that it got funded that same year. And there were five positions approved by the county. And you know what? Rutherford County should know there was not another program like that in the state of Tennessee.
Nothing close to it.
And it began to be recognized as the training center after we began to get into a year. And the things that we learned from the officers and the things that we learned about the schools and the things that they needed and the partnership. And, I mean, as I remember, Gail Toon was right in there with us. you know, looking.
She was. I mean, she was one of the important factors that we had because they looked upon her as the expert when they're looking for the information. But the thing that I remember also is we can't portray it as something that everybody wanted to see.
No, they did not.
Because, you know, having an officer with a weapon on walking through the hallways of a school was unheard of. And, in fact, it was pretty much against the normal thoughts of a principal and a teacher seeing someone in the classroom.
That's right.
Like that. But we have had to overcome a number of hurdles, but there was such a great need for it, and then there was a groundswell pretty much in support of it as we started to get more into it. And the dynamics of it are one of the most interesting things that I've ever dealt with being in law enforcement.
It really was. And, I mean, the seed of the program from FARTA was, of course, a place for children to feel protected. It was not about the dangers of the children in the school nearly as much as it was about protecting the children while they're in school and making schools. I can still remember the vision of the SRO program that the sheriff gave us to share with people, and that is making schools safe for teachers to teach and students to learn. And that was the vision of what the whole program was really about and still is about. And I'm really proud, you know, Truman, That's been a few years ago now, and when I go down the road and I see an officer in a golf shirt wearing his weapon in front of the school, it still makes me smile that SRO is interested in the welfare of those children and those students, and it's still there. And I think that's a great flag for this county since we did the first one, and we had people from Kentucky. We had people from Alabama, North Carolina, and, of course, all over the state of Tennessee, including Metro Nashville even talking to us, because at that time they did not have that in this program. And I think it was a progressive thing.
And Mayor Bredesen at the time came down and talked with us.
And I think it was a progressive thing at the time, and I think it still does what it was designed to do, and that is look out for our children.
And the thing about it is it's one thing, once we set the program up, and all the priorities and how it was to be utilized, we did run into a few potholes during the time because some of the principals didn't feel comfortable with doing some of the things. But we made it known pretty much that the rules were ironclad because it was in the best interest of the kids first, and that was the only way that it was going to work, because if we started to become lax with the rules and allow things to start changing, I always felt like that it would erode some of the effectiveness of the program. And we did have our ups and downs with it, but it's a program that, because of you and all of the guys and ladies that were in it, kept getting better and better and better, because they started learning more and more things that they could do. And being with NASRO, with the National SRO program, we got to learn from everybody across the nation. And the great thing about it is you and the guys did such a great job that this became the number one training area for the United States for the School Resource Officer Program.
It did, and our officers actually received an award for being recognized nationally as a model program here in America.
And you know, we were talking about taking care of people, and especially as you get older, and we have such a great place here in Rutherford County, and it's called At Home Care. And it was started by Melissa, and that's Melissa Warren, and a few years ago. I think she's had it about 4 years. And basically what it does, it takes care of the elderly people and those who have had physical problems and are unable to take care of the normal duties around their home.
Right.
And what she does now is they take care of errands and laundry, personal needs, light housekeeping, transportation to appointments, grocery shopping, meal preparation, medication reminders, and all the other things that you need to be able to stay in your home and be comfortable there. And their office is located at 237 Castlewood Drive, Suite H, and that's behind Kroger's on Memorial Boulevard. And we're going to be very fortunate that we're going to have Melissa on this coming Friday at 2 o'clock. And she will be able to tell you personally about all the wonderful things that they're able to do for our special people to make sure that their lives still are at a high quality.
Murfreesboro Medical Clinic is more than just a clinic. It's the doctors you can trust, a technician you can believe in, and a staff member who goes the extra mile. From the time someone walks in our doors, the difference becomes evident. All of our resources are used to improve the healthcare experience of our patients, and we have been a part of Rutherford and surrounding counties for over 60 years. Murfreesboro Medical Clinic.
Murfreesboro Medical Clinic.
Hello, this is Jim Bryan at First Bank.
And I'm Chuck Lewis. First Bank presents Good Neighbor Events, news of what our local schools, churches, and community groups are doing.
Well, here it is Monday and time for Good Neighbor Events from WGNS. Be sure and give the gift of life today at the Red Cross. That blood drive is from 10 this morning until 6 tonight, and the Red Cross has a new location. 501 Memorial Boulevard, the former Chamber of Commerce building. That's the Red Cross now. Give blood at the Red Cross now until 6 o'clock tonight. And they're doing auditions tonight at 6 o'clock at the Art Center of Cannon County for The Fantastics as well as To Kill a Mockingbird. 6 o'clock tonight, auditions at the Art Center of Cannon County. If you have any questions, call them at 563-ARTS. And on hot days, be sure to check on your senior citizen loved ones or anyone who's alone and ill. On hot days, fans and air conditioners can actually save lives. If you need one, call Dwight Ogleton at the Cool Aid Program. His number is 818-2459. And if you'd like to donate money to purchase a fan or an air conditioner for a needy person, make a check out to the Cool Aid Program and take it by First Bank on Memorial. Again, Dwight Ogleton's phone number is 818-2459. Oh, Movies Under the Stars, tonight at 8:30, over at the Cason Lane Trailhead. It's a free service of the Murfreesboro Parks and Recreation Department. Tonight's flick is A Little Princess. That's over at the Cason Lane Trailhead tonight. And tomorrow night at 8:30, it'll be at the Cannonsburg Pioneer Village. And the Farmer's Market is in the morning, 6 to 11, at the Lane Agripark. They're also having a class on the superfoods of midsummer, starting at 9. Those are Good Neighbor Events, brought to you by First Bank.
WeatherEye.
Sunny to partly cloudy this afternoon, high in the mid-90s. Tonight, partly cloudy, low near 72. Tuesday, slight chance of a shower or thunderstorm, high of 96. I'm WGNS meteorologist Laura Lockwood. Right now, it's 88.
Thinking about retirement living for yourself or a loved one? Think Adams Place in Murfreesboro. Retirement and assisted living, rehabilitation, and long-term care are available. Adams Place Retirement Community. Senior living at its finest.
It's The Truman Show. A look at the people and news shaping Rutherford County with Truman Jones.
With today's guest, Buddy Royston.
Sausage and biscuits, gravy and grits, home ground, homemade, it'll get you fits. Blueberry pancakes and corn cakes too. I'm a licking my lips now. How about you? Ready for, ready for, ready for meal. I said, get yourself to the ready for meal.
We're talking about the readable meal, and you were listening to John Blankenship and friends, Avent Lane, Ken Frizzell, Sarah Frizzell, and Billy Yearwood. And I don't think Buddy has been there yet, but this is a perfect place for you to go, Buddy, because it's really laid back. You love to fish. You love to get out in the country. It's right there on the river. It's an old grist mill, and it's one of the few that's left in the United States. And Tom Brady went in and redid the mill and made it into a really beautiful place, just like it was 200 years ago. And you may or may not know it, but Readable was a thriving community back then because of Tom, of Mr. Reedy coming in, and he built the dam there. They were one of the first places to have ice, and then the first places to have electricity, and it was really a major spot in Tennessee. And now on Saturday mornings from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m., you can go over there and have one of the best meals that you've ever eaten, and it's a breakfast meal. And I love their blueberry pancakes. And everything that you see there is made right there at the meal.
Okay.
And, oh, man, and now it's become an instant success for everybody's wanting to go there. And if you would like to give them a call, it's 563-6455, or you can reach them on the internet, readablemeal.com. And about a 10-minute drive down John Bragg Highway, get about where the Cripple Creek Road is, turn left on the old Murfreesboro Woodbury Highway, and it's about a 2-mile drive from there, and then you can't miss the mill. It's on the left right there at the river, and there used to be some great fish in there. I know how much you like to fish.
I do like
fish. There's some great bass right there in that area.
Yeah. I love fishing. I think fishing is fun. I like to fish with a fly rod.
Yes.
It's so much fun to do that.
I used to wade that river years ago with a fly rod,
yeah.
And I wasn't that proficient with it, but I kept from throwing it into the limbs and the trees and stuff like that. Wasn't too bad. caught some pretty good fish back there too, because I'd always go. That's a good thing about fly fishing. You go by yourself,
yeah,
and you have nature all to yourself. Everything is there.
You do, and as a matter of fact, Truman, I was out of town these last couple of weeks, and I rented a kayak, which I thought was pretty exciting, down in Florida, and went on a kayak fishing trip.
Wow.
Well, I had such a great time. I bet you, I mean, I caught so many snappers. They're called mangrove snappers. They are delicious. But the experience of being in a kayak on the ocean was absolutely wonderful. I really did like it a lot, because it's quiet. You hardly make any noise at all. And you're right there with the creatures, and the water's clear in Florida where I was, and you could just see amazing things. And I do, it does give me peace to go out there in the water and fish and be quiet with the fly rod in particular. But from a kayak, it's hard to fly rod fish, so you use light gear, or at least I did.
Now, were you close to the Keys? Is that where you were?
I was real close.
That is such a beautiful area.
Yeah, I love the Florida Keys. It's like, to me, particularly once you get away from Key West, because that's like a little city. But when you get in the actual Keys, Marathon Key, South, or Americontino, the people are like Tennesseans. They're friendly. They got time to talk. They're interested in where you're from. I tell Susan, I said, Susan, down here, we found Tennessee on the water.
Mm-hmm.
And she loves it, too, because they're slow. They're not in any hurry. They're not big city as far as trying to get there. And so we really find it to be a relaxing place for us.
Do you ever miss being in law enforcement, being with the people in law enforcement? And we're talking about primarily the sheriff's office, because you were with us for a long time.
Yeah, well, you know, you do, obviously, because that's a tight-knit community. It's a tight-knit group. And when you're a part of that group, I think you're always a part of that group.
Right.
Even when you're through, mm-hmm. like me. I mean, I left in 2003. And took early retirement because of my ministry.
Right.
I felt like I needed to go full-time into church management, being a preacher. But, oh, sure. I mean, I hunger sometimes to see those guys on the road. If they're still there, I'll stop. Hey, how you doing? Or anywhere. I'm glad to see them and see how they're doing. But, yeah, I mean, you don't do something that's part of your life like that and have it go away. Obviously... those kinds of experiences that are unique to law enforcement, mm-hmm. being the first people to show up in tragedy, being the person that has to go talk to families. Truman, I will tell you this, the hardest thing I've ever done in my life was being a chaplain in law enforcement when it came to having to do death notifications for parents whose children had had car accidents.
Yeah.
Those experiences, when you see that family... and you see their life turn upside down because they're hearing news they thought they would never have to hear in their lives. It makes an imprint upon your life to have to be with them and comfort them. I can tell you, after I left the sheriff's office, it probably took a good 3 years for me to get over waking up when I would hear sirens in the night. I'd wake up and I would break into a sweat because I was afraid, oh no, they're going to call and I'm going to see some parents confront a reality that's never going to be the same again. And it took me a while to get over that because it made such an impression to have to comfort people, including the officers so many times, because they're people too, to deal with that kind of pain.
But of course, now you're still with it.
I'm still with it.
And that's the thing that's so amazing to me, that you went from one profession where you dealt with all of those different types of tragedies, and then you're back. You're pretty much right in the middle of it, because being a minister, I find it funny sometimes that a lot of people think that a minister is only there for Sunday and maybe Wednesday, but he really doesn't have a whole lot to do. And there are people that think that way, yeah. But they don't understand that you're immersed in it and that you're there pretty much 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And you're dealing, because when somebody has major problems, the first person that they're going to call is going to be their minister.
Yeah. One of the things that I've kind of learned from the law enforcement experiences, the chaplain was, many times though in those situations, the minister is the second or third person to be involved. The officer right there is the one that has to see that life-changing reality occur. Mm-hmm. Yeah, as a pastor, I do think that, first of all, it's a privilege, and you got to recognize that. It's an honor because, you know, when you're there, you're going to see people at their very best and people at their very worst, mm-hmm. because all of us go to those places when we have tragedy and death in our families. And for me, I'm up for it. I think when God designs us, you know, some of us are designed for what this is, and I think I'm one of those. Because it's taught me the importance of caring about people as much as anything. And now you're right. People don't understand, like before I saw you this morning, I had at least two troubling phone calls from people. And I had two people waiting on my office when I walked in there this morning. And I was trying to deal with that so I could get down to the hospital. And I'm not complaining about that. That's what I do. Mm-hmm. And so I'm really thankful for that. But you know, when I was with the sheriff's office, a lot of those men and women really, and I'm sure that's the way it's always in law enforcement, whether it be Rutherford County, they still care about the people, mm-hmm. you know, and when something happens, it's tragic. Everyone in the community kind of suffers at one level or the other, depending on how close you are to that. And so I really feel like that, boy, it's not for everyone. I certainly would tell you that. I can be sitting here talking to you, and I have my phone on vibrate so it won't interrupt our program. Mm-hmm. But really, I'll try to not look at it till after the program, because I could get something on there that could totally change my ability mm-hmm. to keep focused on what we're doing because what you said.
A lot of people think that law enforcement officers, doctors, ministers, those type people that deal with all types of circumstances, including death, they think that they're immune from all of the emotional feelings that everyone else has. But the truth of the matter is they're not. They're human just like anyone else. And you take all of those things home and they do add up on you. And at some time, every one of those people has to have someone to come in and intervene and give them some assistance. And thank goodness that there's always been programs around here and people like you who care enough about people. And even you're going to have those problems just like everyone else.
That's right. One of the greatest training events I had, Truman, came from the sheriff's office. It didn't came really from pastoral training. I was in the role of chaplain a lot, and there was an FBI school in Johnson City, And I had asked the administrative, I guess it was Virgil Gamel was the colonel or whatever, but mm-hmm. I'd mentioned to you, and you said, hey, buddy, take it through the process. Mm-hmm. And so I talked to Virgil, and I said, Virgil, I think I need this. And he said, yeah, I think that's something maybe you should do. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I went to that school, and I learned it was a five-day school, but I learned more in that school about being a pastor in times of disaster, death, tragedy than I ever learned from the schooling I had as a pastor. It was absolutely wonderful, because you're right, Truman. When you see human suffering and you're human, it creates a level of pain in you. And you know what? You have to learn. It's got to go somewhere. You got to do something with it. And I really learned the process of working through post-trauma stress when you're in those environments and you see. And life is holy. And
you're blessed when you have life.
You really are. And when you see it taken away in all kinds of different circumstances and problems, and life is messy, you got to know where to put that. Mm-hmm. You know, you really have to know. And God is faithful to us, and He loves us all the same. You know, He doesn't love one person any more than the other. And so He knows that about us. And sometimes He can be our guide, you know. And I would encourage people that are out there dealing with these things and all that stuff about doctors that Truman said, that's exactly right. They do have to deal with all that because they see it. And I just think it's so important that people understand, you know, that's our humanness. That's our connection, is the seed of love that's in our heart. Because, you know, God is love, and He even calls Himself that. And so I really think that's healthy for everyone to understand that, you know, pain comes and we need to deal with it. And obviously, one of the best ways to do that is together with other people.
And after a funeral, or say during a funeral, when the pastor gives the word, the words are the encouragement for the people who are left behind.
There you go.
The one who has died has already pretty much preached his own funeral. His life is already set to go on to another direction.
That's really
but
right.
It's those of us that are left, the ones that miss them so much, and it is so hard to deal with, and not everybody can deal with post-death situations like that, and that would be a very difficult thing. And no matter what you say when you eulogize someone, you always feel like that you really haven't said enough. And I know that I've always felt strong that after that person's everybody's life is important. It doesn't matter who it is.
That's right.
And I think it's important for us to honor them. And that's why we've always treated the funeral processions and those type things the way we have. And even when we do a law enforcement a funeral, as you know, it's always been our policy that before we go to gravesite, we always go by the sheriff's department.
Yeah.
And let everybody give him a final salute,
yep.
Him or her, and then they will go on the air and say that Buddy Royston is now 10-7.
Yeah.
And oh my goodness, it just
chills,
breaks me
it chills
up.
That and the
taps.
Oh, and the taps. Gosh. And I mean, I don't know, but I mean, there is something special about that. I totally 100% agree with that. There's something sacred about a man or woman that's dedicated their lives to public safety. I think law enforcement is a calling as much as ministry is.
It is.
I really think it's a calling, because people get into that because they're fighting the darkness. They're fighting crime. They're fighting sin. They're fighting just horrible tragedy sometimes.
And fighting themselves.
Yeah. And so I really have high esteem. And that's one thing I did learn about that. You know, some of those young men and women out there, they're going to see things that some of us, well, I've seen it, but so many people will never, like you said, they'll never see that side of the tragedy.
You know, you remember Cindy Pollock?
Yeah, I sure do.
She had won our Officer of the Year as a telecommunications. She was over our communications division at the time, and she had cancer. Very young.
Oh.
And one of the sweetest people. And after she passed, they had her funeral in the Las Casas, Milton area. And I never will forget the first, I think it's the first time that we ever used the bagpipes. Mm-hmm. And that day, it was a fairly warm day, but when we came in with the procession, the person with the bagpipes was already there and ready to start. And it was like a mist in the air.
That's correct. I remember that distinctly.
Yes. And you could see, just barely see the person with the bag, like you were looking through a cloud.
Yeah.
And it had such an aura to it. I don't think I've ever seen one like that before.
Yeah, there was something sacred there's something sacred about every one of them. But that morning, the fog was laying on the ground, or the mist, or whatever that was that morning. But it was absolutely beautiful when the bagpipe came out of the mist approaching us. And, you know, when I think about what all that means, and I think about the families that are left behind, and I really do believe what you said, and that is those services, those eulogies, those things that are being said are really for the living.
They are.
Because the person has gone. And I mean, I don't know. I've not had a close one in a long time, you know, since I lost my mom, which has been,
remember that one,
16 years ago now.
Yeah.
But
we all went up to Bristol.
You did. And I'll never forget that either. You guys showing up there with me. And, but anyway, it is a holy time. And life is, like you said, Truman said, to be alive is a gift. It's a holy gift.
Now, I want to say, kind of got away from the school resource officers, but everybody was wondering when those officers went in the schools. There was five of them that went in that very first year in 1993. They would wonder how successful they would be. And you and I had talked maybe after 1 year, we might be able to see what the progress is going to be. And if you remember, it was just in a very short time, a few weeks, we started seeing those schools change almost automatically. And a lot of it, of course, was that we were able to put the right men into the right schools.
Right.
And as you remember, we put our larger athletic guys in the high schools. And and then the ones that probably could deal a little bit better into the middle school area. And what a great job those guys did. And we ended up having the best school resource officer program in the United States. And then we had one of our officers, Bill Kennedy, won the best officer in the nation.
Yeah.
And it was just a continuation after that of just more and more progress. And I think back to it, and I've told a lot of people many times, I said, you know, God had a hand in that, or otherwise it would have never been near as successful as it was. It was just one of those things that it was meant to be.
It was, and I'll tell you, the officers, the stories they could tell about the things that kids have told them and how the children will run and want to show the officer in their school their report card because they want that affirmation from someone. It's absolutely wonderful. And the connection with the students and their SRO in times of trouble is just amazing. And I'm exactly like Truman. The season was right for Rutherford County and the sheriff at that time, Truman, and for the county commission. We'd have to agree, the county commission, it was all such a
easy
move.
If they hadn't bought on to it, it never happened.
It just moved so easily through the process. And
if you think of how many officers we put in, five. Now, that would have been a lot of officers to put on the road.
That's exactly right.
And now it's grown you could cover probably a shift and a half on the road with the number of officers that we have in a school. But you have to take in consideration, each one of those schools is a community in itself.
That's exactly right.
And that's our most precious commodity.
That's the hope for tomorrow.
And you have to take care of them. And you know, that's what it's all about, is being able to use your priorities the way that they're intended to be, to make sure that you're getting the most that you can get.
Yeah, I was over there in the park walking off of Jefferson Pike I forget the name of the park there in Smyrna, but I was over there just as I often do to walk 2 or 3 miles, and I saw an elementary school out there, and the kids were toward the end of school, and they were all out there hopping around, jumping around like kids do, and I saw an SRO standing back over there watching the kids, and I just walked by there, and just for a moment, I just walked over to the SRO and said, I just want to say thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to say thank you for looking after our kids. Mm-hmm. Of course, I left. They didn't know me from peanut butter. Didn't need to. I just know men out there walking around the park. But it did. It just, you know, our children deserve the best that we have because mm-hmm. they're not going to be there long.
You and I always bring his name up because I still love him. He's gone. He's one of my friends that's gone on. But Bubba Howell was one of the ones that laughed the most when we decided to put that program on, as you can remember.
Yeah.
And he said, what in the world are you doing?
Yeah.
He said, you're going to make kindergarten cops out of all of us.
Yeah,
and
right.
I said, Bubba, I said, only the ones that really have a calling, and I think that's what I told him, are the ones that are going to be in the program. You have to volunteer for it, and you have to really want to be with the kids. And as you know, as it went on, he kept his little jibing.
Yeah.
And then he, one day, I don't know what caused it, but he came to me and said, I really would like to do that. And I think at the time, I think he was hoping that maybe Smyrna would open up and Mr. Rakes would want it. And anyway, he ended up out at Rockville, which is not too far from where he lived in Barfield. And in a few weeks, he came to me and he said, this is the best job I have ever had in my life. He says, I can't wait to get to school every day because as soon as I go in, they all meet me, they all hug me, they grab him by the leg. It was one of those situations. He said, I literally feel like a superstar when I go in there. Mm-hmm. And the interactions between him and the kids was unbelievable. And as you know, he a huge, strong man you'd think would never be ill. He went down. He started having heart problems. And at his funeral, I have never seen so many kids in my life. I think the whole school was there to honor Bubba.
Yeah.
And I have never seen so many emotional young people because of how much he meant and what how it affected each one of them. It
was
amazing.
I was there. I was certainly there when they eulogized one of the teachers, and I did the service, but one of the teachers eulogized Bubba. And you're right. I tell you, there's no doubt that school is going to be protected.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's for sure.
All right. We'll take a quick break and be right back with you.
This is Truman Jones. Let me take just a minute to tell you about my friends down the road in Shevaville at Pirtle & Howerton Automotive. Whether you're looking for a new or used vehicle, Pirtle & Howerton is the place to go. Ford, Mercury, Chevrolet, Buick, or GMC. You can find anything you need at Pirtle & Howerton Automotive in Shevaville. They take pride in the vehicles they sell and strive to succeed in great customer experience and satisfaction. Whether you are looking for a new or used, their friendly and knowledgeable staff are eager to assist you in your car buying process. You can check out their extensive inventory at PearlHowerton.com.
That's Pirtle & Howerton Automotive, 2006 North Main in Shelbyville. Don't let a 20-minute drive cost you thousands of dollars. Go by, see them today, or give them a call, 1-800-264-6800. Or online at PirtleHowerton.com.
Are you looking for a great vacation destination that won't cost a fortune? How about two parks for one low price? Everything's better at Beach Bend Park at Splash Lagoon. Beach Bend Park has dozens of rides, live shows, mini golf, a petting farm, a new haunted house, and an awesome wooden roller coaster. Or cool off at the all-new Tiki Island and Splash Lagoon Water Park. Free parking, free sunscreen, free tubes, and free soft drinks for everyone. Visit beachbend.com or Facebook for online ticket discounts. Beach Bend Park and Splash Lagoon in Bowling Green, Kentucky.
And today's special at Kirk & Birch is our award-winning smoked wings. This is Tom. Come over and get you some. They're just 40 cents each. That's Kirk & Birch, 517 Cason Lane, just down from the theater. Or call in your order at 893-FOOD.
He knows Rutherford County as good as anybody. Truman Jones. It's the Truman Show here on WGNS AM and FM.
Welcome back. We've had a really great time, and being around all my buddies, this is not work. This is fun. I mean, it really is, and I enjoy being able to bring people in like Buddy that are entertaining. I mean, they're very interesting people, and we're just so blessed to have so many people like them in Rutherford County. And I have been asked a number of times, how in the world do you get so many people, so many different people on, and they're all so interesting? It's just the truth of the matter is that everybody in Rutherford County has a story to tell. And we all live different lives, and everything that we do, whether you realize it or not, are interesting things. And other people, it's almost like a private or a party line, I guess, like we used to have years ago when we have our telephones, and everybody would listen to see what everybody else has to say. I mean, we're not keeping any secrets up here.
No, it's a great show. It was a great show. I really enjoyed being here. I really want to thank you, Truman.
Thank you, buddy. And I really appreciate all the many wonderful things that you've done for this community and everywhere else, and such a sweet family. I mean, Susan, I know she's been a really big help to you over all these years.
And she has. She's my sweetheart.
And I appreciate you taking care and watching over Bart, because that's a big thing for all of us, and everybody cares about him. And I do want to say one thing to Brian. I could not do this show without Brian. Brian does a lot of things, a lot of technical things, and he keeps me, I guess, cued in on all the things that need to be done while I'm sitting here having fun with my guests.
You can't say that I've kept you on track, though, because it's 3 after 3, you know.
Well, it seems like, didn't you tell me a minute ago that, you know, just stay on there as long as you can, so I'll have less work to do, is it?
Well, sure.
I mean, where else but radio can you do that?
There aren't many places.
No. Everything has a deadline and commitments, and here on radio we don't have that.
None of
it. We can do what we want to do.
Yeah, well, it's been done here today already.
I know.
In more ways than one.
Yes. There you go. But remember tomorrow, Dan Whittle will have a guest on tomorrow, and I will be at one of the funerals. But we'll be back Wednesday, and I think we have Juan Romero on Wednesday. So it's going to be a great week, and it started off wonderful.
Thank you.